everyone, and welcome to Minute 70 of Movie Rob Minute, daily podcast, where we take a wild trip through the 1987 John Hughes comedy, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off this week is Duncan Shields, poet, animator.
I keep slowing your roll
You're very animated. You're very poetic and animated. How's that?
There you go.
So anyone who's listening the rest of the week knows who Duncan is. How's that? There you go. And Duncan's here. Welcome back to the show, Duncan.
Hi there. Glad to be here. Happy Friday. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday, everyone. Yes. So minute 70 begins with the car continuing to back up and ends with Susan turning over in bed.
Susan. Okay that's her name.
Yes. So yesterday we ended the minute with Neil basically selling his watch for a room for the night, and Del trying to figure out what he's going to do. So the clerk, played by Martin Ferrero, in his final shot, in the final scene in the movie, basically starts to say to Del, "So you want a room also?" And then Del turns to him and says, "Oh, I got a slight problem here. I don't have $42.50. So he looks at him and says, "Well, do you have $17 and a good watch?"
It was a pause. "Do you have $17 and a good watch?" He's got a big pause.
Yeah. And as this is happening, we see that Neil is backing up the car and just backs it up across the motel lot. You know, does a very nice job parking. And he parks in front of the rooms. And we see, as you mentioned earlier this week, a large silver steer head that's mounted on the building.
That's right. Yeah.
And he's able to... successfully turn off the car. Which...
Now, when the car's backing up here, chugging and backfiring, if I'm not mistaken, I think they threw a little fart into the audio mix. It seems like there's a little bit of a biological kind of emission sound happening in there. And because I remember in the Fast and the Furious movies, sometimes when the car is peeling out, they threw in like a dolphin chirping into the peel out sound. And once you hear it, you can't unhear it. But it looked like they might have thrown in a little.
I did not toot notice
the backfire of the car here.
I'm usually not on the outlook. I'm usually not on the lookout for bodily functions in movies. Right. But hey,
for flatulence in cars, I may I'm hearing what I want to hear.
That's definitely a possibility. So Del then continues his conversation, and he says, "Well, I don't have." You know, the clerk had asked him if he has $17 and a good watch. He says, "No, I don't. But I have," and then he reaches into his pocket and pulls out, and he goes, "Well, I have $2 and a Casio." And I love the way how he takes his watch off and, like, puts it across his hand, the same way that you would see in, like, an infomercial or something like that. It's just...
Yeah, the price is right drape across his arm here of the Casio is... I hope that's improv.
It's complete improv. It's not in the script. I will give you that information in advance. Yeah, no, that is not there at all. And part of the problem here that I have with the scene is at the beginning of it. So Del seems to have lost his touch as a salesman. The entire movie, he's showing how much of a salesman he is.
True.
You know, he's very friendly to everybody. When he was in the other motel with Gus, he was talking with Gus.
Yeah.
You know, very friendly. He knows him from before, stuff like that. He's able to sell all of the shower curtain rings as earrings. You know, that all works also. But in this case, he's at a loss for words, really.
That's a really good point. I never noticed that. Like, I know that he needs to not get the room so that the film can progress to its next emotional, you know, beat or whatever. But, yeah, it's a very strange kind of thing.
Yeah.
He's not a good salesman when for the rest of the film he's been like one of the best. Like, as annoying as he is, as a, you know, as the caricature of a human that he's coming across as, the one thing that's not in doubt
Yeah.
is his salesman capabilities. And here he is kind of just flailing
Not at all.
And not
and
making
then
it happen.
It's a slight problem, the fact that I see that. But what can you do?
Yeah.
You can't have everything. Nothing can be perfect here. And this is something that I don't think you normally would notice.
Yeah.
I think it's something that I'm only noticing, you know, because we're doing this minute by minute.
I now that you point it out, I see it as an issue or as something
right.
that stands out, but it didn't
and
cross
the clerk
my
gets
mind
a little too much enjoyment,
so, yeah.
you know, by asking for the $17 and a good watch. Because he's basically saying to himself, okay, well, if I can get a good watch and I only have to pay, what is it, $28 for it, $27 for it, might be worth it.
Well, yeah, and that watch, quite honestly, covers two rooms. Right.
Yes.
So it's not he could be a good guy about it. You know, he doesn't have to be a jerk. But I think at this point for the clerk, it's just good TV.
Yeah.
Like he's watching it all through the plexiglass going,
yeah,
oh, man, this is solid gold.
Correct.
Where did these two come from? I was bored out of my mind. This has been a very entertaining couple of minutes.
Yeah. Now, did you notice what type of watch he's offering him? Obviously, it's a Casio, but did you notice?
It's not a calculator watch,
no.
is it?
No, it's in.
No, because I had to do some research on those for Tron, because
right.
Bruce Boxleitner has a sweet, sweet calculator
yeah.
watch.
No, so this
one.
Is a Casio A159WA-N1 digital watch.
I thought so. Yeah, it looked exactly like a WA-N1
there you go.
Model.
There you go. All right. You see, I know you know about these things, Duncan, so yeah.
Yeah.
And according to the research that I was able to find, this was actually a model that only came out around that time. It came out like in 85, 86, 87, something like that. Even though I was surprised to read this, that Casio started making G-Shocks in 1984.
Oh, G-Shocks or Casio?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
I thought the G-Shocks only came out in the 90s. I wasn't aware that they came out.
So what was it?
84 were G-Shocks. This is not a G-Shock.
I am also shocked.
You're shocked?
No, I thought...
You're shocked at a G-Shock?
I'm shocked. Yeah, G-Shocks to me are quintessentially like 95,
yeah.
94, 95.
That's what I thought too.
Huh.
No, I know. I had a G-Shock in 93 when I was in the Army, so I know I had a G-Shock. But,
right.
But and I thought it was something, you know, major at the time. You know, I didn't think it was something from before.
Yeah. Well, that happens a lot.
Yeah.
Like people, you know, there's a couple of cell phone companies here that are just rebranded versions of the companies that already exist. You know,
right.
You get these, they just go through a little rebranding phase and you're like, haha.
Yeah.
You know, I'll show you, I'll buy Coke instead of Pepsi. They're both owned by the same company. Oh, dang it.
Yeah.
You know.
And then we get to see the clerk debating this issue for a few seconds. And then he looks and declines the offer and says, I'm going to have to say goodnight. So.
I'm going to have to say goodnight. Yeah. That's so good.
Yeah, no. And he just
deal,
walks
deal
away.
Deal or no deal.
Exactly.
No deal.
He just walks away. And we can see that Deli is quite disappointed about this. And then they change the music and we get a very somber type of music playing. You know.
And I love
yeah.
it.
The music in this movie is great.
I love it. This 80s synth
yes.
wash. Like people make fun of the 80s. You know, they make fun of the 80s sound. They make fun of 80s clothing. And this is something that I have a hard time rolling with, because like a lot of the synth tunes that were made were very evocative and very emotional. And there's something very true about the emotions that they're trying to portray and represent, the loneliness, the isolation. There's something about the 80s and the soundtracks and the music that really, really, like when it was good. Like I'm not saying the cheesy stuff didn't exist, but I'm saying when they used those
mm-hmm.
instruments and those electronics to make the sounds when they're trying to evoke an emotion in movies like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles and a few other ones, like Ferris Bueller's Day Off too, when like Cameron's lying in bed by
yeah.
himself, you get that sort of guitar playing, but it's like a slow guitar playing over this like synth wash, and you just really, it's so emotionally effective. And yeah, you get the 80s toms, the
Yeah.
you get all these horrible cliches that you can, rightfully lampoon the 80s about. But when they came correct with these new tools, it was
Yeah, I mean,
bang on the money and
I
it was
still love listening
fantastic.
to Axel F. You know, it's just music. It's just synth music, and that's it. And it works. You know, even after almost 40 years, it works really well. What can I tell you?
Still a great track. Still a great track.
And then we get a shot of Neil in the motel room, and we see that there are two single beds in here. I love that they have these wagon wheel headboards.
Classic.
And then there's a picture on the wall. Do you know who that picture is of?
A velvet painting of what I'm assuming is Roy Orbison.
That's what I found also. And it shows the thematic look of this particular room, I guess.
I don't know if I've seen a velvet painting of a celebrity. I usually associate velvet paintings with like sad cats or caricature puppies or clowns or something like that. But or Elvis. Oh, I'm sorry. No, there's like a billion velvet Elvis
Yeah,
paintings.
probably.
So aside from Elvis, I haven't seen too many celebrities. This is my first Roy Orbison velvet painting sighting in this movie.
Makes sense. So,
Yeah, he was a big deal, Roy
And then
Orbison.
it's great because Neil then looks at his arm to check the time.
Right. It's a great little
He
moment.
has already forgotten that he no longer has a watch.
Muscle memory. Oh, dang it. It's two hairs past a
Well, the
freckle.
truth is,
Two
I do
hairs
that too. When
past.
I'm not wearing a watch, I will still look at my arm where I normally have a watch on. So I can understand that.
Always.
And for him, it's a little more painful because it's a $1,500 watch. But then he picks up the phone in order to try and make a call, and we see that the phone is locked.
Literally locked, analog locked. It reminds me of when I went to Scotland. My family there had a TV where you could put 10 pence into the side of the television and it gave you a half hour of TV.
Oh, wow, really?
Like you'd put money into a parking meter or put money into a washing machine. They had that set up for their television because they were renting their flat, I think, and it was a type of television service you could get. So you just had to put coins into the television to watch the television, which I thought was absolutely amazing. Like you can monetize anything. You can put money into the bed for the 1,000 finger massages or whatever. But this literal lock on the phone, I thought was pretty incredible. Almost like a like the car driving boot that you can put on your put on the wheel of a car to make it so that it's not going to drive nowhere, or the club that you put into the steering wheel.
When I think of putting money into a TV to watch something, I always remember the movie Carbon Copy with George Segal and Denzel Washington, where he's apparently his son and they're in a motel and they want to watch TV and need to get coins. That's what I remember of the movie. I haven't seen it in a few years, but so I
I'm going
don't
to add
really
that. I don't
remember
think
enough
I've
of that.
ever seen that. I'm going to add that to the list.
It wasn't that great.
Okay. Well, good to know. Good to know that going in.
Don't go in that you got a recommendation from me on that one.
Okay. All right. Cool. I won't hold you to that then.
So there's a little bit of a note on the phone, and it says, "For local calls, dial 9."
Yep.
Okay. Now, do you know
Always that.
where that originates from? Like, what's the idea of why it's going, why you
Well,
have to dial 9?
my assumption would be that like it's a party line of some kind. Like I think there's one line that goes into the hotel, then that's kind of a complicated mess, and then the line is parsed out to all the different rooms. And so when you dial 9, that puts you to like the outside.
Correct.
And I
Wow,
think
that's pretty good.
you can't dial 9 by accident. That's one of the reasons why the like it would be better if the emergency number was 111 because that's quicker to dial on the rotary phones, but it's 911 because it's really hard to dial 9 by accident. So once you've dialed the 9, then you can dial the rest. So I think those are two
Well,
of the
first of all, you
reasons.
are very correct with that. That's
Okay,
great.
cool.
It's because in order to get out of the system, whether it's an office or a motel or whatever, they have all the lines connected, because then you can have internal calls, but in, you need a way to get to the external calls. So that's why they chose nine. And part of that has to do with, as you said, because it's the hardest to get to on a rotary phone, at least. You know, nowadays,
Yeah, and zero and
nowadays it's not.
zeros and zeros taken. Zero's already taken, so
Yeah,
nine's the
nowadays
next
it's
one.
not much different.
Difference. It's weird how we got all these leftover, leftover things that were created because of the limitations of the analog technology, and the limitations are no longer there, but the rules are
Correct.
still in place. You know, there's a word for that, for the type of pictogram that you see on your phone. You'll see like an envelope for mail, and nobody uses, an envelope for email, right? Nobody uses that anymore. You'll see like an old school phone for the phone number, and like nobody uses those old school phones anymore. So it's
Correct.
interesting. I forget what the exact term is that, but it is like the dated pictogram that we're still using for technology
Oh, it
that
makes
no longer
sense.
applies.
It makes sense. So as Neil is trying to make his call, which he cannot do, right? So the shot shifts and we get to see his wife, Susan, turning over in bed, and she looks to be deep in thought. So just to give you a little bit of history, in the full script, there is a whole subplot that has been taken out where she thinks that he's cheating on her. Throughout the entire thing, every time that they have a conversation in the movie, they have a few conversations, and the conversations don't always end on amicable places in amicable places. But in the original script, she hangs up on him, furious every single time, because
Oh,
she thinks
I'm
that
kind of
that
glad they
he's
did that.
making up this whole story about this guy named Dell and that he's with some woman the whole time.
I tell you, I have had my fill of squabbling couples in movies. I'm out. if there's a running through line of just a married couple sniping at each other, I kind of check out.
No,
So I'm
I'm
glad
good,
they
but
cut that, I guess is
it
what I'm
doesn't work
saying.
as well. You know, I like the fact that,
No.
you know, he's trying to go get home to a loving family, as opposed to
Yeah,
not wanting to not
that's
want because
what
there
I
are
prefer
points
to
in it
see.
where he just says he doesn't really want to go home because of all the arguments and stuff like that. So,
Yeah, that's too many ingredients in the soup, I think. I like that it's just a Dell and Neil special. We don't need that
So
extra
the
layer.
script has a few little discrepancies here. They have an extended conversation between Dell and the clerk. The clerk then says, when Dell's the clerk says to him, "You need a room?" And Dell goes, "Yes, I do." And then he goes, "Your credit card is all burnt up too." And then he says, "Well, I don't carry credit cards." So then he goes, "Well, $42 and no room service, no phone calls, no satellite TV." So then Dell says, "I don't have $42." And then the clerk says, "You got $17 and a good watch." And then he goes, "I got $2 and a Casio." And then the clerk says, "Good night." And the clerk steps away from the counter. And then Dell holds up his hat and says, "I'll throw it in my hat. It's a beaut. Warm as all get out. Warm as all get out." I don't know what that really means.
Warm. Oh no, that's an old school expression.
Okay.
Warm as all get out. I think it's a middle America thing that it strikes me as mid-Atlantic, something you'd hear Cary Grant say, this suit is amazing as all get out. Like it's a strange angling of the
And then
language,
we have the
but it's
clerk
like a
turning off the
slang.
lights, you know, stranding Dell in the dark. And then we
Ah,
see
okay.
Neil in the hotel room, and he's got the rotary dial phone that's locked, and he doesn't even then he just screams "Damn!" and slams the phone down, and doesn't know what he's doing. And that's how the minute ends in the script.
I will say this hotel room is
Very
awfully brown
El
with
Rancho.
the wood paneling walls, and we got that driftwood lamp. And a Western theme in Illinois kind of is a bit of a
No,
does that seem
you're gonna get it
strange?
everywhere. It doesn't really
That
make a
seems strange
difference.
to me.
Yeah. All right, so
I suppose
every
so.
Friday we have a segment called Weekend Candy, where my guest will give their top five John Candy films. So, but first of all, we've teased 2 days ago that Duncan is going to actually give us a John Candy story also.
Well, the cool thing, because you were talking in the last minute about the five and how there's been a ton of people on the five, we are about to put a new person on our $5 bill up here in Canada. And there was a concerted, strong push with what those are
Signatures,
lists, yes, signatures.
petitions, petitions, petitions.
No, like petitions, right? Yeah. So there was a big Canada-wide petition to make sure that John Candy was one of the candidates to get put on the bill, because you need to be a Canadian by birth or naturalization, and you need to have demonstrated outstanding leadership achievement or distinction in
Oh, wow.
any field benefiting the people of Canada or the service of Canada. They need to have been dead for at least 25 years.
No, he doesn't fit that. Oh, wait, he does. He's been 30. It's 28 years. Right. 28 years.
And they cannot be a, yeah, he does. He just gets across the finish line on that one. And they need to not be a fictional character.
So it won't be Dell.
It won't be Dell. It won't be Harry Crumb. But yeah, he's been, because his death was in 94.
Yes, he'll be 28 at this point.
So, you know, it,
It's 28 years.
it usually, he well, the not to bury the lead, but he didn't make the list. Because
Oh,
it
sorry to hear.
usually goes to, you know, more,
Prominent.
I don't want to say important people, because they're not, like, it goes to arguably more deserving people, you know, like on the 10
So
recently,
too
we
bad they can't put Alex Trebek on there, you know.
yeah, well, one day maybe, but we got Viola Davis Desmond on our $10 bill recently, and in 2018, and she's a civil rights movement icon who, like Rosa Parks, wouldn't leave the colored part of the movie theater and move to, like, or sorry, no, she wouldn't leave the she wouldn't move to the, you know, the colored part of the movie theater after she paid full price, and that started a movement, you know. So that's a pretty big deal. That's pretty important. That's a, you know, maybe more deserving than a movie star, because
Who knows? We don't get to choose. You get to vote, and that's it, you
Yeah, well,
know.
the candidates currently are Frances Pegamagabo, sorry, Indigenous rights advocate, First World War hero. We got Frederick Ogilvie Loft, aka Onondaga. He founded the League of Indians Canada, the first national Indigenous organization in Canada. We got Isipona, oh, sorry, Issipomakasike, aka Crowfoot. He was a Siksika chief who negotiated with the federal government on behalf of the Blackfoot Confederacy back in 1877. Lotta Hishmanova, born in Prague, emigrated to Canada, but she founded the Unitarian Service Committee of Canada, helping the poorest, sick, and starving victims of war, natural disasters, and low-quality education save millions of lives. Pitsiolak Ashuna, an Inuit artist who passed away in 83, gave birth to 17 children, had an amazing artistic career over 25 years.
Wow.
Robertine Barry, aka Françoise, she was the first female French Canadian journalist and a relentless advocate for women's suffrage, shelters for the poor, and elderly and female victims of family violence. And then Juan Alexander Kamyao, first baby of Chinese descent to be born in Canada, and he voted in 1890 and had his vote taken away because of a racist law on the books, and he challenged it and got it overturned, and he voted again in 1949 at the age of 88. He's the only person to vote before and after those laws were taken away. And then number seven, I mean, sorry, the last one is
Oh,
Terry
okay.
Fox. I don't know
Of course, I
if you've
know
heard of
Terry
Terry
Fox.
Fox, but
I've seen the Terry Fox story
yeah.
in
Yeah, so
1983,
Terry
the
Fox
very
is,
first HBO
yeah.
original movie.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah, he died of cancer in 81 at the age of 22 while trying to run across Canada. And, you know, arguably he's the only one on that list whose name I actually was familiar with before I read the nominees. Although the accomplishments of the other nominees are all incredible, like uniformly. So I can see how, in the face of that, John Candy, like it,
Yeah.
one of the qualifications being you have to have leadership achievement or distinction benefiting the people of Canada or in the service of Canada. That's kind of like, well, does that really fit? Like,
Yeah, I understand that.
because a lot of amazing people, they did more than just make some funny movies. But, I think it would make everybody smile a little bit when they're handling the $5 bill and it has John Candy on it. And I don't think that can be discounted. I think that would raise the spirits of the entire country across the board because we love John Candy, so much here. And we call all our $1 coins loonies because they have a loon on them. And we call our $2 coins toonies
And you want to be
because
able to call your five candies.
we could have called our fives candies, So I'm sorry that he didn't make the cut.
Yeah.
I would have
So
liked to have seen.
instead we still have weekend candy. There you go. So you can now give us your top five John Candy movies.
Yes, my top five John Candy movies. Well, the first one's not a movie; it's just a role of his, and it was the Dr. Tongue from SCTV. There was Dr. Tongue's House of Horrors, and he was this guy who would introduce the scary 3D movie. So it was like Dr. Tongue's House of Pancakes, and or he was no, he was the character in the Dr. Tongue movies that Count Floyd would introduce. So he would always say, "Would you like some more pancakes?" And then thrust the pancakes towards the camera, and then away from the camera, and towards the camera, and away from the camera, while the music went do 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 do. That was all the 3D movies and all the stuff he did on SCTV was just fantastic. There's a bit where he's a drummer for a punk band, and Martin Short is the lead singer, and they sing a song called "I Hate the Bloody Queen," and it's a fantastic little bit. And he plays this stoic punk drummer.
Okay, great.
Number four, Little Shop of Horrors. I often ca catch myself going, "Isn't it weird?" As he introduces the plant, Little Shop of Horrors. Three, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. He brought so much heart and love, like that monologue that we get to, I think, later, where he's, "I like me, I like who I am." That's
No,
it. Just
we've had that already. We've had that.
beautiful, beautiful,
Yes.
beautiful monologue. After Steve Martin, "Here's an interesting idea. Have a point when you tell a story." You
Yeah.
just pulling your string, blah, blah, blah. Like he just lashes into Dell, and Dell has to say, "People like me. I like me. My wife loves me. I don't care what you think of me." It's just a beautiful, beautiful scene. So, it could have been more just tripping and stumbling and whatever. But, John Candy really came across as somebody who had integrity. And
Completely.
his he I wished he would have been around for longer. With his with the size of him and the work that his heart was doing to keep him going. And I think he liked cigars, and I mean, I don't know. I guess it's not surprising that he went when he did, but they would have liked another decade or two of John Candy for sure. But I'm glad we got the impressive body of work that he did manage to put out while he was with us.
Yeah, so you still got two more, number two and number one.
Spaceballs, number two, Spaceballs. Love me some Spaceballs. That's a fantastic. Barf the Dog is just a beautiful role for him. It also really showcased his lovability. Love that. And number one, gotta be Uncle Buck. I watched that movie over and over again. Love me some Uncle Buck. I know it's a John Hughes joint, and it was already in the John Hughes list. But whenever John Hughes's path crosses with John Candy, you get absolute magic.
That's true. Very true. All right. Thank you for that. So every day we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track, where either myself or my guest will give a short little story about some sort of adventure, misadventure that one of us has had in our lifetime. So, Duncan, you got a final story for us?
Well, I got a choice of two. I got one that was kind of funny. Well, I'll tell that one. I'll do them both. The first one is a Greyhound bus. We no longer have Greyhound buses in Canada. That the corporation went under, which is too bad because it's a big country, much like the U.S. It's a big country, and there's a lot of small towns, and that was a cheap way to get from town to town. And that doesn't exist anymore. So I really was hoping for our government to nationalize the service, but it didn't go down that way. So one time we were in a Greyhound, and I was traveling the the route from Vancouver to Nelson, which I often did because the night bus was just a straight shot all the way through. And it was raining like crazy, and there was a hole in the roof of the bus, and it was leaking down into the luggage rack, and it was dripping down through a hole in the luggage rack onto me. And I tried to cover it up with gum, but then the gum like froze solid and would no longer adhere to the metal of the luggage rack, and so it fell off. And it only happened every time the bus slowed down. The water would slosh forward and some of it would drip out of the hole onto my leg. And that was a long, cold wow. night of traveling on the Greyhound bus. that's
one right, of my great. Thank you very much for that. So I want to once again thank you for being on this entire week. Do you want to, for one final time, tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Go to chronologicallyspeaking.com. Go to the timebanditsminute.com. Check out By Duncan Shields on Twitter and Instagram. And go look for my book, Small Windows by Duncan Shields, and get yourself a copy of that. Nice little bite-sized science fiction stories that you can read in small little chunks. So
that's a good book to pick up. Thank you. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcatchers you might be using to listen to this show. And to find me, very simple, just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, or you can go to our website. So, everyone have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday, but until then, you're fine.
You're fine.